going on down there?
Ladies and gentlemen, it's once again time for a somewhat belated WTF Prime Time! I'm still not entirely unsick, but goddamn, I can do that again. With me today is Gog Dog.
Hello,
Christopher.
Hello, Jeremy.
Hello,
Aaron.
Hi.
Hi, Aaron.
Hi. We're here for two of them.
Yeah, we're doubling up because, like, I didn't even see Grill before I heard from a lot of people that Grill was a clip show, but I'm okay with that kind of spoiler, I'm not gonna lie, because it did set my expectations appropriately. But we all decided last week that, like, sitting down to record an entire show about Grill would be kind of a squandering of our time, especially with people asking us for a BotCon prep, and by people I mean, like, well over two people asking for it. So we did that instead. And we mushed it all together this week so that this episode is called, because I love my portmanteaus, Grill Mata. It's also going to be the name of the barbecue restaurant I open up when I'm rich. So we're going to open up by talking a little bit about Grill, because I actually was pleasantly surprised by Grill, oddly enough. After hearing that it was just like a total degenerate clip show, having watched it, there were actually a few things in it that really amused me. And I came out of it kind of smiling. Like, I think because I knew it was a clip show going in, I ended up enjoying it more than I think a lot of other people did, although it was still really clip showy. So I just want to bring up my personal, like, there were two moments I really enjoyed in Grill, and I want to bring up the first one, which is actually from the ending. What started off as a gag that I thought I was going to kind of groan at turned into something I really enjoyed when Fowler just decided to call Optimus Prime to this kind of grilling he was under, and Optimus Prime just kind of walked up to the window going like, "Have you found any Decepticons?" He's like, "No, but that's my boss." And Optimus is like, "Ah, General Bryce, hello, how are you?" And the little "how are you" that he did at the end, I thought was, that changed it from like, oh, it's like in the movie number one, to this amazing moment that felt a lot funnier than anything the movie's ever tried to do with Transformers peeking in through windows. I thought that the sound of Peter Cullen, like, and the fact that the Prime design is like, has this permanent scowl when his face mask is up, just like staring through the window, he goes like, "How are you?" I thought that was really amusing. I really can't explain why, but that, having that at the end of the episode just made me smile during the credits. I really can't explain it. How did you guys feel about the literal deus ex machina of Optimus Prime just kind of showing up to prove that he's alive at the end? Like, did you feel that should have just happened right away, or were you cool with it being the little goofy bit at the end?
I was cool with it being at the end. Just it kind of felt like, look, I mean, this is what's hold on, let me get him on the phone for you. And then, you know, better than the phone in real life.
Mm-hmm. And Gog, how about you? How'd you feel about Optimus Prime's appearance in this episode?
It was funny. I mean, it was just one of those things where it's like, we're going to do a clip show. Like, at least let's have a little bit of fun with it. So it was just kind of like a gag at the end. Like, it was fine. Yeah. I kind of feel bad for Fowler because for some reason they keep implying that people think that Nemesis Prime was the real Optimus. And despite Fowler being the only real human from the government that has any real contact with these guys on a regular basis, the fact that he keeps telling them that Optimus Prime is not dead and people are for some reason not believing him, but yet still trusting him with this incredibly top secret role. Like, it's like, that must make Fowler feel really important about how seriously people take his job, but like, whatever. But it was mostly just there for the humor, but it was fine. Yeah, it was funny.
Just because Grill is such a short episode, do you mind if I just run through the little bits that amuse me and get your guys' thoughts on them?
Yeah, go for it.
No, let's make it quick, actually. But
yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
there were two other moments I really liked. Number one was the addressing of Fowler's lack of a flight suit. I thought that felt like the dudes writing it had just been hearing people talking about it, and because this was a clip show and they didn't even have to animate anyone saying it, they just went like, let's just write a line about why Fowler can get away with not wearing a flight suit.
Yeah.
And I thought that was very amusing. I like a little bit of self-awareness in there. The other thing I really liked was the way that the cliffhangers were all kind of BS in a very, like, straight-faced way. Like when Fowler talks about Unicron, they're like, we're going to have you submitted for mental assessment. You're going to be in the loony bin. He's like, what? Commercial break. Cut back. General Bryce is like, you're trying to tell me that you're fighting a unicorn? He's like, I said Unicron. It's like, oh, never mind. Strike it from the record. And I was like, I love how they're trying to put cliffhangers into the clip show. They just made up this lunatic-like stuff that was completely nullified as soon as the commercial break ended. Like, this felt just oddly self-aware for a clip show, like right down to the tropes of an episode structure it was supposed to follow. Also, the guy who played General Bryce sounded so much like, oh God, Fanzone, and had a mustache that I went and checked to see who voiced him, but it wasn't the same voice actor. It was in fact a voice actor who has been on a whole lot of stuff, whose name just escaped my mind because I don't have the episode open. But I don't know. Any other thoughts on Grill from you guys, GOG?
The only other interesting bits that came out were, I thought it was kind of clever how, because this was actually the first time outside of that toy packaging reveal that we found Silas's real name, the Leland Bishop.
Yeah.
So they mentioned it, and I thought that was cool how it kind of, I remember stating before, like how I was impressed with Fowler kind of going in there one-on-one, risking his life to put, to buy Optimus Prime some time to save his life. And this kind of also played into it because, like, Fowler was kind of prodding him for information during that fight, and Silas revealed, like, he's like, no, I was special tactics. First thing Fowler does is, boom, goes back, they run a check, find the guy's face, and now they know who he is. So that was actually a bit of a little clever intel gathering and probably a bit of a slip-up on Silas's part. Because Silas thought he was going to get out of there alive and Fowler wasn't going to make it. And just that little bit of prodding. And now they know who this guy is, because previously they just knew he was some sort of badass that and they had no idea where he came from. And the other bit too was the justification of why the mech soldiers all have their faces covered. And apparently because Silas was discharged from special tactics for kind of being a loony or whatever, or at least in the eyes of his superiors. But apparently special tactics is still an existing active unit. And there's the possibility that people active in that unit are still loyal to Silas. So them covering their face actually makes a lot of sense, because they could very well still be active duty military. And that was a bit of a cool reveal too. So it was a bit of a clip show, but kind of justifying little things throughout were really clever, and it still continues to make mech a bit badass. Like it's like I mean, we all know the reason why they all have the mask is because of the limitations on making new models, but the reason why the time they took to kind of justify that and actually make it a plot point, I thought was kind of impressive.
Oh, for sure. And by the way, I found the actor's name. The guy who played General Bryce was Oscar-nominated actor Robert Forster, who was known for his supporting role in Jackie Brown. He was also Arthur Petrelli, the father of evil in Heroes, right around the time that Heroes went into the stinker.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So he was the voice of General Bryce, which I thought was really cool. It's kind of neat to get a celebrity voice actor in on a clip show. Again, like, kind of breaking the trope of the clip show and making a little something special of it. I mean, ideally, he will have a larger role than that in the series to come. But, Aaron, what were your thoughts on Grill? Just anything left over?
A lot of the same. I do like it. It seems like it would be a good episode if there was somebody that wanted to be introduced to Prime. For being a clip show, it covers kind of the basis of who the characters are, and then also why what's going on is going on. It wasn't just like, oh, we need a fluff episode here. He's just giving a report. It kind of did a bot by bot breakdown of what was going on and filled out their character or their story. At least it was good that there was structure in there. This is something I could show to the roommates if they ever showed interest in my stupid giant robot things. I'd be like, no, this is your primer, so you don't have to go back and watch whatever 40-some-odd episodes.
You remember Robert Forster?
Point.
He's in this.
Yeah. Well, that's the one thing that has amazed them occasionally. It'd be like, yeah, that's Ernie Hudson. Why is that familiar? The Black Ghost. Oh, my God! How is he on a cartoon show now? I'm like, down on his luck? I don't know why.
having a good time with it.
Yeah.
But I agree with you guys very much, and I think that is why I ended up actually enjoying Grill, is it, as a clip show, did a whole bunch of very minor but still very noticeable world building, especially with mech. It had, I think, some pretty clever, you know, little bits of humor here and there, kind of self-aware stuff, even self-aware that it was a clip show. And I just kind of enjoyed it. Like, it was kind of relaxing almost. Like, I went in expecting the most, like, you know, weekly anime, egregious clip show of Fowler just, like, talking to nobody and muttering to himself in his mental dialogue about everything that's happened. But instead, there was structure to it, and it actually did add a few things to the series. So,
yeah,
I kind of got to give Grill some props. I mean, outside of, like, for the clip show it was probably one of the best kind of clip shows you could ask for. So I felt really surprised that I came out of that just so positive about it. I was like, wow, I kind of dug that. But unless we have anything else to say about Grill, let's go into Armada, which is the new episode that aired just yesterday, because we're recording this on a Sunday, because we are all hella busy getting ready for BotCon. So
don't remind me.
Getting stuff out of the way sooner than later is probably a good idea. So Armada is an interesting episode. I think one of the most interesting things about it right before I saw it was, thankfully, people were not as spoilery on Twitter, but I literally saw someone say, wow, Armada was cool, followed by, Armada pretty much sucked, like, within the same minute. And so I was like, oh, this is going to be one of those episodes again. In this episode, I thought it had a really cool opening, actually. I wanted to just briefly talk about the interesting way it opened up, which was it threw us right into the action, ended with Bulkhead apparently, like, crushing Starscream's head, cuts to him more or less confirming that he's just killed Starscream, and then cuts to 24 hours earlier. I thought that was a really cool structure. It reminded me of just like a kind of stereotypical indie film structure in order to heighten drama and get the audience's attention. But I thought it did it in just a kind of cool, subtle way, and Prime hasn't done that very much. So, like, these kind of, like, time-skippy things. So I thought it was a really cool way to do things, and it also meant that the preview clip they showed for this episode was entirely misleading, and I loved it, because I had no idea what was going to happen with Starscream, and, as opposed to, you know, what actually happened.
Yeah.
So I don't know, how'd you guys feel about the kind of interesting, like, 24 hours earlier misdirection opening?
Well, I guess as we, I'll go more into detail about it as we talk about some of the other things, but, like, this episode to me felt like it should have been two episodes. They crammed a lot in, and I felt like if this had been two episodes, one focusing on the whole Starscream and the clone thing, and then Arachnid and the Armada, both of those plot points would have been much greater, better served in that aspect. There was way too much going on. So the whole, you know, faux opening and having that, like, the 24 hours earlier, and then kind of resolving that within about 5 minutes, and then the episode just continues on, and then by the end of it, most of what's going on doesn't even have to do with that anymore. It just, this episode just felt very, very unfocused and very unsure of what it was trying to do. And I think that this would have been a very clever way to do it if the whole Starscream thing had its own episode dedicated to this. And I think it would have carried a little bit more weight for me. It certainly wasn't unclever, but it just having that resolved within the first 5 or 10 minutes of the episode and then just continuing on because there was so much more that this episode had to cover, I think did the structure of that opening quite a bit of a disservice.
I actually am inclined to agree with you. I think the episode was overloaded, and I think that the entire plot point with Arachnid and the Insecticons didn't need to be in this, because I agree, it would have been, like, I loved the Starscream clone story, but it was laid out in a really weird way where they kind of blew the surprise immediately and then showed you the rest of the episode. And I thought it would have been great. Because it took away some of the impact of seeing the other Starscreams. I thought it would have been great if you just saw Bulkhead basically kill Starscream, put his body in a corner, keep walking around, then bump into Starscream again, and not explain exactly what's happening until...
And have that be the pop to credits?
Oh, no. I mean, like, run the episode like that, and then not show that Starscream has clones until, like, after the 15-minute mark.
Okay. I think to expand on that, you almost could have done this as one two-parter, stretching them out, maybe having the end of, like, where Starscream's clones get taken out into the all the Insecticons as the carryover point, as another, like, 24 hours previous to run the two shows as, or the two episodes as one, and kind of show that it's all moving at the same time and giving both sets of those storylines the time they deserve. Because, yeah, I think there could have been a whole lot done, maybe not to the extent of animated with Starscream's clones, but, you know, you could have seen a whole lot more in that.
Even just the jokey side of it. Like, I was actually, I really enjoyed the way they did his clones, because it was a little bit different than how animated did it. So I sat there and I knew immediately, I was like, oh man, someone is really mad that Starscream just did the animated clones thing in Prime.
Yeah, they just didn't have enough time.
Yeah, I really liked that side of this episode, and I was kind of pumped with the Insecticon side of things, but after I thought about it, the main thing the Insecticons brought to the episode that I actually enjoyed was the whole sensation of Megatron basically going like, this is a friggin' weird day.
Yeah.
It's just like, wow, there's 50 Starscreams. Oh, hey, million Insecticons. And they're suddenly subservient. What a day. I just like the idea of Megatron just wandering around in this, like, just waving his hand, like, I guess just, Megatron rolled sixes today. But, yeah, the structure of it, I like, it had such a strong start that I loved the way it opened up. And I do have to agree, though, they didn't really play off that as strongly as they could have.
Yeah.
But there is a lot more to talk about in this episode, because it is a butt-loaded episode of just stuff happening. Gog, what's the point you'd like to bring up?
The unfortunate early end to the whole Arachnid and the Insecticons thing. I mean, it's very possible that this may come up, because the only reason why she lost control of the Insecticons was because she was put into stasis, and apparently it blocked her communication with them. So now they've reverted back to, they are subservient to Megatron, or higher beings, or whatever. However Starscream put it in Crossfire. So it's possible she may be able to regain control of them at some point, but that was a huge, huge bummer for me. And again, I guess that's partially my fault for me seeing all this potential and kind of coming up with my own possibilities for what's going to happen, and then the impatient writers of Transformers Prime coming in and just deciding that, nope, that plot point is over. I don't know. Maybe I should have just not gotten my hopes up for this at all. But the fact that the Crossfire ends, last time we see Arachnid, that episode ends with her finding this giant army of Insecticons, and within her first time deploying them, it's all completely nullified. And it's just such a waste of potential, especially when you don't even give it its own episode. It's just half of the plot of a single episode.
It was a subplot for this episode, really.
Like, exactly. I think
if you weigh them, the clones were still the primary plot. And
I would even say that. Yeah, this was, I would agree with that. The other thing that I hated about this was, look at the power that we have seen from the previous two appearances of the Insecticon. First, the Insecticon versus RC. It beats RC, hands down. The only reason why they even survived that encounter was because of the Scraplets literally eating the thing from the inside out. Otherwise, there's a good chance neither one of them would have made it off Cybertron, and the consequences of that would be huge. The next time we see one, look at what it does to Megatron. Yeah, we established that Megatron was a bit of a disadvantage because of the webbing on his weapons, but even so, it's just the sheer power of, and look, but look at how they were portrayed in this episode. Bumblebee is just single-handedly shooting some out of the sky just for them to crash and not...
A tree kills one as well.
It's that trope of the power ramp. The first time somebody shows up, they're the big bad, and then
there's the power ramp.
Trickles down.
There's the power ramp, but, like, as a guy who watches, like, Super Sentai lives on the power ramp. And yeah. This was the steepest power ramp I've ever seen in my life.
It was a huge disappointment to me. When I saw those Insecticons come out, I was like, here we go. And then just watching them just shoot them out of the sky and then just crash and twitch. Like, seriously? Like, after all the establishment of how badass these things have been built up to be, like, the way that they were handled in this episode was completely disappointing, and I would say almost near unacceptable given the continuity in this show. And it really turned me off. And I don't know, like, the writer for this episode, I looked him up. This is the first episode of Prime that he's written. Certainly not other cartoons. He's got a bunch of other stuff to his credit, but it really felt to me like they had handed him a list of bullet points he needed to hit, and that's literally what he was doing, was hitting the bullet points. And
yeah, it felt like they neglected to tell him what the Insecticons were. They just told him there's a swarm of them, and
yeah.
I could
yeah.
totally see it. Like, I don't hold it against the writer entirely, because if someone just tells me there's a swarm of insect robots, it is easy to assume, well, I guess they must be weaker if there's lots of them.
Yeah, so I'm not blaming the writer, but as far as the overall what happened in this episode, it was piss poor. Granted, what has come before it and what led into this, and I don't know, like the whole thing with the Insecticons was just one giant remedial
Insecticon butt kicking class.
There's actually a couple interesting threads of conversation that came out of that. There was a thread on TFW's Prime board actually all about what happened to the Insecticons. And there were two theories I thought were quite funny. I just took the best I could out of it. One theory was that the tree that killed a couple of them was actually an Autobot, and you just didn't see the Autobot logo. It's like an Autobot who turns into a tree.
What's her name from Beast Machines?
Oh, Botanica.
Botanica.
Yeah, it was actually a hidden Autobot who turns into a tree. So he had like Cybertronian power trunks or something.
I'm fine with that.
The other one was people trying to just logic out how were these Insecticons so clear. Like, at first you start thinking like, well, maybe some of them, like, we haven't seen them get shot with Megatron's cannon. It was webbed up last time. Maybe some of them, blah, blah, blah. But eventually people just figured out, like, if we're going to even try to figure out a canonical way that this works, maybe the other two Insecticons we saw had been active longer and were more awake, and these ones, having freshly come out of stasis, were all hideously weakened. Maybe these ones
sleep in their eyes still.
Maybe these were all some form of Insecticon larva as opposed to fully formed ones that we may have seen before. And this is all, like, the most conjecture-ass conjecture you could ever do, because it's just trying to figure out, like, how to connect this episode to episodes that have happened within the last 4 weeks.
I have a better way of connecting it.
The one on Cybertron was just right out of the stasis pod.
That's exactly what I thought. RC. As soon as I read that theory, I was thinking, that makes it... No, wait a second. We saw the one on Cybertron pop out of its egg right away.
Yeah. I have a better theory. It was a kind of a crap way to handle the Insecticons, and it shouldn't have been done that way. That's my theory, but...
No, it all must be canon.
How does that work into the canon of the Science of Prime? It was all Unicron.
The writer basically, because when you have fiction, the writer is God, because he is predetermining the events that these characters must play out. It's predestination theory. Mm-hmm. So yes, it is a spiritual event.
It was Alpha Trion and his magic quill.
It was a spiritual event. It was a spiritual event that the characters were predestined to do this, and they did not accomplish this on their own. That's my theory.
Yeah. This is
predestination. Look it up.
This one, I actually did end up enjoying this episode overall, but the Insecticon side of it, just watching it, I was like, there's just all this stuff happening with this that could lead into really cool stuff, but man, what a kind of a bummer to happen this fast and in this way.
And the other thing about this, too, that kind of ties into this is, like, there were so many beats that were repeated from Crossfire. Like, the whole Megatron saying, like, oh, like, what a day or whatever. That was almost exactly what he said in Crossfire. Like, the whole, like, surprises never cease. Every time somebody new shows up, and just one crazy-ass thing after another. So, like, that happened. And then we see Arachnid in her spider mode. She has all of her legs again, which, you know, that could be explained. She's free. She's not like she's detained or hiding. So she could have easily reattached her leg. But then when she gets put in that stasis egg thing, it cuts the leg right back off. And it ends with her losing a leg. So there was just these weird kind of points and beats that they were hitting that had already been exactly previously hit in Crossfire.
Yeah.
And so, like, I looked it up, like, well, you know, maybe it was happens to be the same writer, and it wasn't. So it was just some really weird repeats from Crossfire. So that part really kind of bugged me. Like, the whole, yeah, like, Megatron basically saying almost the same line, just slightly rephrased, and I don't know. RC chasing Arachnid down a hole yet again. Like,
I was really confused. You almost by how just Arachnid got killed. Got captured in that stasis thing too. Like, when I watched the episode, I was like, they're making a big point about her stepping on a thing, and then the thing closed up. I was like, what just happened? And it took me a while to kind of catch up to the episode because I was just really confused.
Well, the rough thing is they'd never really showed that before.
Yeah, and then they showed it all in these weird, like, very fast close-ups, and I was like, what just happened? Why is she in an Insecticon egg? Why did the egg close up again? Why would it do that? And then I was like, oh, okay, it's a stasis pod. She's in stasis. Oh, okay.
Yeah. But all those things I said, and then RC breaking off from the team to chase Arachnid down a hole. Like, yeah, I mean, like, the bit with RC, like, deciding not to kill Arachnid after she was in the pod and bringing her back to the base, like, that was, I guess, an important kind of thing, but, like, with the exception of how that played out previously, like, there's, like, three or four major things that happened in this episode, or maybe not major, but just little beats that the beats that it was hitting on the way through the character moments that were almost directly mimicked from Crossfire, and that was really strange to me, because I'm like, they should have just called this Crossfire Part 2, or Crossfire Redo or something like that, but
Refire.
I don't know. Yeah.
The whole, like, I think really the parts of the episode I didn't really dig all had to do with Arachnid and the Insecticons, and I kind of maintain, I think if you took them out of this episode and filled in their parts with just more mystery and drawing out the mystery of how there are so many Starscreams, this would have made for a more interesting standalone episode. I will say again, I dug the Starscream side of it. But Aaron, let's move along to you. What is a talking point you've got?
Just more of the clone stuff. I was surprised that they didn't do anything with their coloration as a nod of any sort. I know that having it all appear to be Starscreams was important. But, I mean, in the very beginning, I was like, oh, there's five of them plus Starscream.
Yeah.
that's everybody. That's important. So I was kind of hoping for that, but I mean, seeing how it shook out makes sense for sure. Mm-hmm. But just the way that the clones, because they talked, was it like binary sparks or something? There was some technobabble in there that was like the
binary bonding.
So that, you know, it was some of the good technobabble, and then also. Of real interest was the way that the way that the feedback worked, I guess is what I'm stumbling towards. Mm-hmm. Of you know, when they got hurt, Starscream felt it, which then also made him executing the last clone at the end have a kind of bit of a sick beat and also humor to it.
Yeah, and I kind of enjoyed that little aspect of it, because I mean. I am always amused by the way that it seems in Prime, it's like Starscream always rolls ones no matter what he does. Even when he when he succeeds, absolutely, he still manages to roll ones. So it's like, I found a lab and I can make clones. And it's like, yeah, and every time one of them gets hurt, you feel a horrific pain in your body. And he's like, why? Why does this happen to me? I was kind of amused by that.
But the clones, it also brought it.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, okay.
I was going to cap another part of that if that didn't have more discussion.
I was going to say with the clones, I was actually for a little while thinking that, like, I think it was necessary that they all looked identical for the sake of the faux mystery that they were going to do and kind of killed before they got to make it into a real mystery. I thought once the four of them had faced down Megatron and he was starting to tell them, like, why don't you go kill Starscream and come back here and I'll make you all my lieutenants. I was like, maybe he'll convince them to turn on Starscream, and then they'll change their colorations and take on their own names, but have this weird, like, hive mind aspect going on. Cause I really like the line they deliver when they all first speak, and they're all basically, like, speaking almost at the same time, but, like, speaking different parts of sentences. I really like the creepy nature of that. And then when there's only one left, I was like, is he going to go off and become, like, Skywarp to, like, legitimize Arms Micron's toy line or something? And then it's like, nope.
Yeah, that's totally why I thought that was going to happen as well, because crazy Takara Tomy's not going to release toys unless there's something backing it.
At least that's what we thought.
Yeah. But no, and then, so the thought that I had at the end after the execution, they've talked about how taking parts from another Transformer is ghoulish, is taking parts from your own clone ghoulish?
Mm-hmm.
So I see this as at least Starscream winning in some way of getting a T-Cog back, but...
Yeah, at the expense of having to, like, murder himself and feel it in his head as he does it.
Yeah. Like, I think that's the obvious thing that they're going to do. The only thing that killed that for me at the end, though, is because he's like, he basically shoots the guy in the face and it ends. And I'm like, okay, that was a cool way to end it. And then the guy's like, ow, it hurt. And I'm like, what? Like, so now, like, we don't even know if the guy's dead or not. And it's like it was a really weird comedic beat that it hit. And I was just like, no, he should have just had it end with Starscream being a badass and basically murdering himself. And then, the whole, like, ow, it hurt. So it's, I mean, I don't know. Like, well, then, so who knows? He might actually still be alive, but I don't
know. You know what I thought was going to happen? I thought he was going to pull his finger claws out and literally gut his clone to get his T-Cog and then feel himself doing it to himself the entire time.
Right.
I was like, that would be the most awesome, horrible thing to do to Starscream. And then they didn't. I was like, I guess that's a little bit too horrible.
The momentary freakout thing that I had was that the clone was going to off the scarred-up Starscream and become the new Starscream as a way to reset, because if the clones are all the memory, all the everything, that would have been kind of a messed up way of, well, no, that's not Starscream, but it is Starscream, but it's...
I'm glad that didn't happen.
Not Starscream.
Because I hate it. I hate character reset-y stuff that does that, unless there are huge, like, consequences to come with it. I would be, like, really wary, because that, to me, is on par with Energon and Superlink mind-wiping their villains.
Right. Well, I think that it could be played as a Starscream then trying to go back and, you know, that one taking the other Starscream's head back to Megatron and, no, I'm not him at all.
What if Starscream takes the clone's head
Starscream,
back and then
not
says,
Starscream.
Hey, I'm the clone and I went and got the head for you?
Yeah. Well, the only rough thing is he wouldn't have the knowledge of that deal, though.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah, you're right. He doesn't know what they know. That's true.
I was seeing that up until the last moment. It's like, guess not.
Do you guys think there are any more protoforms down there, or do you think that he just blew 5 protoforms and he's, like, got to go find a new...
Well, my theory on that is now we know why they have so many Viacons. Because, I mean, they definitely look similar to the Viacon-esque, and even the Insecticon having that generic head, or that might just be the writer's style for this is genera head. But
yeah,
like the fact that they, like, sometimes in episodes Autobots seemingly kill 50 to 100 Viacons, and yet they still have this never-ending army. There's protoform somewhere,
right?
So I have a feeling, I don't know, the Harbinger is probably dried up, but I'd be surprised if the whole protoform issue, or at least in some form, doesn't come back at one point.
And there's just Viacon Phil in some basement supplying Energon for all these clones.
The Alpha Viacon. That would be an interesting plot point. Like, if maybe they are, maybe it's not like a chassis thing, like they are all just clones of one guy. Like, imagine if they make a plot point out of, like, who was the original Viacon. That would be kind of neat.
And that would explain why the Viacons get continuously more inept, because if you look at the pilot, like, RC pulls up, she's fighting 2 or 3 Viacons, but they actually start kind of kicking her ass, and Bumblebee helps out, and even they're being kind of pushed to their limit, and then Bulkhead finally shows up, and then the Viacons leave. So it took the Viacons actually being outnumbered before they were willing to retreat. If you look at them now, like, the Viacons are just shot out of the sky like mosquitoes. Like, just a single shot, boom, 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 all the Viacons are dead. Autobots don't even have to dodge. They can just stand in a circle and shoot in every direction. The Viacons will eventually die.
This episode was horrible for that, too.
Yeah. But, like, so you could kind of make the whole Botanica is actually on Earth in Prime, and she helped defeat the Insecticons. You could make a similar claim of the Viacons continuously getting more inept because they're making copies of copies.
They're like a continuous degenerative stream of clones. That would be kind of...
Yeah,
like
that one...
Idea.
What was that one movie?
Multiplicity?
Yeah.
It's a copy of a copy. It's never quite as good.
Exactly. It's just like that.
As like the idea that like somewhere buried on Cybertron is like the Alpha Viacon, and he's like this old Viacon in a hood, and he's got a cane, and he can barely walk. He's like, they called me Steve once or something like that. Let's move on from there. Aaron, were the clones your plot point you brought up?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm trying to think of something else. Like we did cover all the big ones already. The other
well,
big plot
I have
point that
something
happened,
that kind of continues from where we were rolling. Do you think the Insecticons are going to replace Viacons with as many Insecticons as went down?
I suspect there's a chance they may at least join the Viacons and the Jet Viacons in the disposable Decepticon pool of models to choose from. But I'm sure that whenever Arachnid eventually gets out of stasis, they'll make a big thing about her retaking control of them. Because they still haven't actually stated why she's even able to control them.
Yeah, I'd kind of felt it was like whoever has the most powerful, maybe personality or something.
Well, it seemed like there was just the way they directed the shot where she's giving them commands and like her face is being cross-faded over top of all of theirs. It felt like there was something else going on that.
Yeah, like the fact that this whole Insecticon army thing seems to have been at least somewhat resolved and or not resolved, but just utterly ended. And they didn't even take the time to explain that. Is again, like this whole, all the Insecticon parts in this show were just lame. They were yeah. lame beyond lame. It was the most disappointing thing in this show that I've seen in a long time.
I have high hopes that there will at least be some kind of payoff for all this.
I mean, obviously Arachnid's going to come back. I mean, granted, given the like I said, the impatient writing in this show, I wouldn't be surprised if Arachnid just doesn't pop up again next episode already. Like the whole thing of her being stuck is, I don't know. I'm frustrated after this episode right now.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can see how the episode was disappointing in some ways, but I keep saying it. Like, I ended up in really enjoying it once it was done. I think just the delivery of the episode to me was, like, it had so many good little scenes and vignettes that it kind of just kept me on board, but a lot of those were entirely thanks to Starscream. So, I maintain it should have just been a Starscream episode. The actual big plot point I wanted to talk about is that there was another changing of the world in this one, which is that the Decepticon warship is now no longer airborne. And I thought it was kind of funny that all it took was Bulkhead throwing himself fist first at it to literally knock out the entire reactor and the whole thing goes crashing down. I was like, oh wow, I wonder
that
if
was
that's
a really precarious setup of how it kept afloat as well.
Yeah, I was like, I wonder if that's like, because I was thinking about it, I'm like, technically the Autobots have never really had a chance to just explore the Decepticon warship and pinpoint its reactors, so it's not like
I
said, why didn't they do this before, and I was like, all right, there's decent reasoning for why this hasn't happened before, but I was like, that is a real precarious way to build your warship when if you throw a blunt object at the reactor, the entire thing comes crashing down. That's kind of crazy. So I'm curious to see what'll happen. It looks like the next episode has to do with the warship in some way. So I'm curious to see how they move on from that. Hopefully the next episode will actually address the warship being grounded. Because I thought that was an interesting way to end the episode, to have an episode-ending status quo changer, to literally ground the Decepticons after they've had this complete air superiority for the entire series. What do you guys think is going to happen with the warship? Is it the Nemesis? Do we know if it has that name? I keep forgetting.
People
keep referring it to that, but I don't think it's ever been named in the actual show.
Yeah.
In fact, the wiki has it listed as Trypticon.
Oh.
So, but
really,
well, I think that's going back to like Exodus and stuff. So it's probably tying in things that were never meant to actually be tied into Prime.
Oh,
so,
I
have no reason. I don't know. Like, I don't even think that's a spoiler. It's just. Like, and in fact, a lot of the articles and stuff call it the Nemesis, and when you click on it, it redirects. So no one even on the wiki can agree with.
Imagine if out of nowhere, War for Cybertron Trypticon is actually that ship, like the crazy talkative dinosaur. Like I loved him in War for Cybertron. That would be great, but I also don't think that's going to happen. Yeah, I'm curious to see what they do about this warship thing. If it's just going to be like next episode, like, all right, we fixed it. Or if it is going to be some kind of ongoing plot point. It felt like they were setting up a background shot by having it like slide to a stop on the precipice of that cliff. Almost to the point where I was wondering if that was homaging some previous Decepticon or even Predacon base setup, but I could not recall readily in my mind. Moving on from whatever happened with the Nemesis Triptychon, Gog, have you got another point you'd like to bring up?
I can't really think of anything offhand. I'm sure Aaron has a billion things. Go ahead, Aaron.
I don't know. I've pretty much gone through mine.
Oh, wow. Already? Okay.
The only other line that I had was like a Bulkhead's bit at the end of like, guys, you won't believe the day I had.
I enjoyed that because I kind of,
yeah.
For all the weaknesses in the episode, I kind of liked how it was this weird just stacking of ludicrous circumstances and Bulkhead runs like, guys, you won't believe what I saw. He looks and there's Arachnid like stuck in Stacy. He's like, oh, you guys too, huh? I thought that was kind of amusing.
Yeah, but no, that's, I mean, we hit all of my real topics.
I have two graphical points.
Super fast. Okay.
I think in this episode, Arachnid looked a lot better in daylight than I remember her looking before. Like, her model just seemed to play in daylight a lot better than that first time we saw it in daylight, and it just kind of looked unfinished.
Have we really gotten a whole lot of her in daylight, though?
I distinctly recall the first time we saw her in daylight, it made us all kind of go like, her helicopter mode doesn't look as good anymore. And her robot mode, I remember we've always had the discussion of how good the models look in daylight, and I just felt like something about Arachnid's model, like the textures maybe felt more polished, just something about it felt like it felt better looking in this episode. And I'm leaving aside the fact that I watched this episode in 720 after seeing everything in standard def for the last few weeks. Like, there was just something about the coloration of her model that felt a little bit more vibrant and natural. Also, there were some amazingly good animation moments in this episode. Particularly in the various Star Screams. If you watch, there's like when the first one that we see in the opening, when we get to see how it came to bump into Bulkhead, when it's sneaking around, that Star Scream, like his wings are almost like dog ears. Like when he gets freaked out, his wings like just dip down, like almost completely angled down, and then like kind of jerk back up. And I really liked how they made the position of his wings play into his mood and how frightened he was. There's also like... Go ahead.
I said, like Bumblebee and his doors.
Yeah, they did that with Starscream's wings in this. And also, that first Starscream, the way that his face animates when he bumps into Bulkhead. And in fact, that whole exchange that he has with Bulkhead at the start, I really enjoyed. Like, just he's all like, why do I keep bumping into Autobots whenever I come back to my ship? And then Bulkhead's all like, hey, get me out of here. He's like, what do you got for me? No. And I actually was kind of bummed when it came to when they came to blows, because I thought it was way funnier and just more entertaining when they were just like, quietly yelling at each other in this hallway, going like, will you just help me get out? No, you get out of my way. I'm going to do things. No, you help me out. Like, I like that kind of bickering between these two characters in a life or death situation. And also, like, as much as the Insecticons were a bummer plot-wise in this, I did really like the imagery they had for them, like, flying around en masse. It looked really cool. I liked the way that they had, like, Viacon guns come out of their noses in bug mode. And also, Megatron generally looked good in this episode, I found. Like just in enough to make me want to say something about it. Like, the way they had him, like, just march out into this storm of Insecticons, like, looking around, ignoring his soldiers dying everywhere around him, just to, like, take one shot at a single Insecticon out of the hundreds. Because he's like, hey, that one I can shoot. All right, now what? Like, I really enjoyed how they played Megatron's body language in that sequence. I think that's part of why I also enjoyed this episode, is I felt like there was a lot of really good quality to the visuals in it. Just a lot of animation that I was really getting into, a lot of subtleties, a lot of choices in direction. Visually, I actually had a good time with this one. And for a lot of the plot points, I had a pretty good time. But I definitely find myself having to agree that the Insecticons were kind of blown in this one. And I will totally say, there's all kinds of ways they could make the Insecticons awesome playing off of the events of this episode. But it was, in the moment, kind of a bummer to see the Insecticons and Arachnid get turned into a subplot rather than the focus of a main episode. I think that's really the biggest issue, is that they were not the focus. They were just one of three things happening at the same time. I don't know, any other thoughts on the episode from you guys?
No. Basically, like I said, I think that both of the plot lines in this episode would have been much better served to have dedicated episodes I think they both suffered intensely because of it, much more so the Arachnid. The whole Starscream clone thing was a neat idea. I think it played out well, but it should have been its own episode. And I think that this whole episode was a writer was given a lot of bullet points that needed to be hit. And he did what he could. Maybe he just wrote a crap episode, in my opinion, or script rather, or maybe he was just given way too much. Maybe this is like a Spider-Man 3 thing where they're like, no, you have to include all this in and you only have so much time to do it. Go. And he did the best with what he could. I don't know. But either way, the final result for me was a coulda, shoulda, woulda, but it ended up being incredibly disappointed. And I hope that the rest of the episodes in this season are back up to the higher standard that has been set previously. Yeah.
I'm with you. I really would have liked to seen this as two different episodes because there so much more could have been played through it.
I just want to throw one more thing and I forgot to mention. I don't know how I feel about the Insecticons all just speaking in unison.
I was going to bring that up too.
That was kind of cool in concept, but I feel like the moment for that to happen should have been cooler than this. Kind of like having Soundwave speak. Like, it's not nearly as important, but if you're going to reveal the Insecticons can speak, I'd rather it to have been something way more punchy than them just going, like, we are subservient to you, the higher life form. Like, I wish it had just been something a little bit more shocking in having...
Again, it just... Like, I felt that that plays further into the whole... Well, the writer didn't really understand the Insecticons. Like, we're just going to make them weak... You can just shoot them out of the sky like cannon fodder, and then at the end they're going to talk. Like he didn't seem to understand what had come before when it came to this. Like he was given like, here's a synopsis of what the Insecticons are. Okay, put them in your episode. Go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel kind of. I know we'll probably never know the full story, but I definitely feel like I can't get mad at the writer of this episode. It feels like he kind of just didn't. It feels like nobody told him enough to write this episode.
Yeah. It's almost something where I think maybe plot point wise that we'll get in another clip show that'll explain stuff for us is that it has something to do with the power or control of whoever's making them subservient. You know, Arachnid had a little bit of power to do it, so they were pretty straightforward. But with Megatron, you know, the we bow before you, our Lord and Master, or whatever, he's got the charisma or the cult of personality or whatever behind him to be able to drive him that much harder to power him up. Kind of, I don't know, Geth-ish to talk more Mass Effect, but as there's more of them together, then it works better. I don't know. I'm trying, writer, who's... I'm trying to pan back and see who did this.
I'm curious to see what is said about the events of this episode later on and what is not said about the events of this episode later on. But, I guess that's Armada. Lots happened, but it was also pretty easy to talk about. I also really like the scene where all the Starscreams are walking together. I was sitting there going, like, should I just go buy 5 more Starscreams? And then they all got killed, so I was like, okay, I don't have to. We're going to be, we might be delayed in getting our next prime time out, because that's going to be while we're all at BotCon. So, unless we see it there or something.
Written by Matt Wayne in his first script for Transformers.
Wow. He did okay.
My eye on you, Matt Wayne.
Dear Matt Wayne, the only things you did wrong had nothing to do with the episode as a standalone. It had to do with the episode as part of a series. Keep trying. I believe in you, kid. I believe in you. Probably like 30 years my elder, I bet you. Like, who is this? What's his last name? Wayne or Wang?
Wayne.
Wayne.
Wang. Yeah, Wang. Wang.
Wang? Matt Wang?
No, Wayne.
I was going to say, if it's Matt Wang, I was going to get my elder Chinese man voice on, but bummer. And also, I totally am getting tired of these Hub Family movie commercials. I keep waiting to see, all right, what's the clip for the next Transformers Prime? And it's like, hey guys, Air Bud is up next. And I'm like, I'm really glad I don't have the Hub to watch Air Bud right now.
But it's a great story of a boy and his dog.
If I swiveled over to my computer to start writing thoughts about Prime and I had Air Bud playing in the background, this podcast would be a whole lot different. Yeah, so that's Prime Time, I guess. Our next podcasts are all going to be pretty much at BotCon. So we may have a Prime Time at BotCon. We may not. It really depends on whether or not we see the next episode while we're there, or whether or not we have the time to talk about it while we're there, because I'd rather just talk about BotCon while we're at BotCon, but we'll see how things pan out. So hopefully this is part of your BotCon listening audio stuff, going to or returning from the convention. Hopefully you had a good time if you're coming back. Hopefully you will have a good time if you're going, unless you're planning to poop on a table, in which case, please don't. That's just not cool. Not even in Texas is that cool. So thank you, Aaron and Gog, for joining me for another Prime Time, and I will see you guys in, like, what, 4 days?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, what, 240 hours. I will start counting now.
You'll be seeing more of me than anybody. Roommates, buddy?
Yeah!
Aaron the traitor. Fine, whatever.
Staying with the guys I've been with since before the podcast, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Goodbye, Aaron.
Is that how you hear him when he's speaking?
Yep. I didn't even hear what he said. I just tried to mimic it so that maybe he could do it back to me and we could start learning in his language.
I hate you all.
Prime out.
But you got some badass perpetrators that are here to stay.